It won't be the Sarah Show for long, don't worry. This morning's reading comes to us out of the book of Psalms, chapter 33. For the word of the Lord is upright, and all God's work is done in faithfulness. God loves righteousness and justice. The earth is full of the steadfast love of the Lord. By the word of the Lord, the heavens were made, and all their host by the breath of God's mouth. God gathered the waters of the sea as in a bottle and put the deeps in storehouses. Let all the earth fear the Lord. Let all the inhabitants of the world stand in awe of God. For God spoke, and it came to be. God commanded, and it stood firm. We're most familiar with the two creation stories that we find in the first book of the Bible in Genesis, but there's actually multiple creation stories found within our canon. This is just one more of the way humans imagined God creating the earth. I love this one, with righteousness and justice, the earth filled with God's steadfast love. The idea of God gathering the waters of the sea as in a bottle and then putting the deep storehouses, the water in storehouses. Humans have been trying to figure out where we have come from since the beginning of time, but more technically, just since the beginning of humanity. We're trying to reflect, to understand our place on earth. So humans ask questions and tell stories, trying to get our minds around our existence. Our scripture was never meant to be a history book, though in studying it, we can understand something more about the history and cultures of its writers and their communities. Neither was it ever intended to be a science book. Now, some have tried to theorize that the first story in Genesis, the one about the 7 days of God's creation, which actually is the younger of the two creation stories, it just comes first in the scripture. But some have hypothesized that maybe they meant a day was like an eon, and so who knows what a day is for God. And I suppose that makes sense, but I think there's a little more mystery to it than even that. Yet as this story continues, we see how human beings try to figure out who we are in this world and what are we supposed to do here. We sang the story of Adam and Eve, and although we're not meant to take that literally, that story has the human beings coming last. All the world came first, and the vegetation and the animals, and then finally God created humanity. But it's not science. And yet, Adam and Eve's curiosity is indicative of our human species because we're curious. We were made to ask questions, to seek wisdom, not as a punishment, as Christian interpreters have long understood the interaction between Eve and the serpent. Ask a Jew about the story of Adam and Eve, and you will get a different answer. So please do. Find your Jewish friends, especially a rabbi. And if you don't have one, I'll give you a rabbi to call. Because we've always thought of that as a bad thing, that Eve sought wisdom, and yet there it is in our stories that Eve sought wisdom. And perhaps it was the fate of the human race that we would leave the box of confinement and explore the world to find our place in it. Now, we might not understand everything, but one thing we know is that the Bible is not always where our answers come from, despite the fact that many times we can go to the Bible and find an answer for our lives. But sometimes, the questions come here too. And so we've been gifted with minds to ask and think and talk about our questions, to delve deeper, embrace these minds that we have been given. So for this day, we celebrate Evolution Sunday, and the preacher gets to step aside, I know, finally, get me out of here, and we get to invite a scientist to our pulpit. Why, people ask us, why would we invite a scientist to preach on a Sunday morning? Because we're not afraid of science. Because we don't come to church to check our brains at the door. We bring them because God has gifted us with our minds, gifted us with questions that come from each of these thoughts among us. And we believe that this gift of science is not incompatible with God, but instead is that gift that God gives each of us. So, what a joy it is to welcome our friend Russell Baldwin to the pulpit today. Russell works for the Orange County Sheriff Department as a forensic scientist and has done so for 28 years. I've had a little bit of conversation with him about this, and I'm already just fascinated, just jumping at the bit to hear more. I have a feeling that either directly or indirectly, we will make some of those connections to our faith as we think about the role that science plays in Russell's life, and thus by ours by extension. So join me in welcoming Russell Baldwin.
Good morning, Fairview Community Church. So that's a hard act to follow. Evolution. So I'm going to talk to you about forensic scientists, which doesn't really directly talk about evolution, but it certainly has something to say about it in a sense. So forensic science is, how do I get you to get you to advance the slides? There we go. So first I'm going to start with a little history of forensic science. The first application of forensic science was in fingerprint analysis. And it's when they find a fingerprint at a scene, they determined that everybody has a unique fingerprint also on their fingers, and that they can compare them. And that those results, when they're a match, when it's done correctly, are very, very powerful. And they can place somebody at a scene of a crime. Advance. So as things advanced and more powerful types of things were, there you go. More powerful science was applied to crime scenes, and also more innovative tools were used in the commission of crimes, such as guns and tools and pry bars and so forth. They had to expand their ability to look at it. And so they took what they learned from the patterns of fingerprints and they applied it to, say, bullets. And they found that when a bullet passes through a gun, that it creates a pattern on the bullet, and that it can refire multiple bullets through that gun, and they can take the bullets that they fired, and then they take the bullet from the scene, and then they can compare them, and like a fingerprint, the patterns match. And they can say, this bullet came from that gun. And thus they can compare the two and put that gun at the scene of the crime. So forensic science is a very odd science. It's not really a science in itself. It steals from other sciences, biology, chemistry, anthropology, pathology. A lot of forensic science has to do with people who have been murdered. I've kept this talk sort of PG-13, but there are gonna be some parts that are disturbing. So, modern forensic science includes some of the following: toxicology, firearms and tool marks examination, which I've talked about, DNA analysis, forensic alcohol testing, solid dose, drug identification. So, any one of these subjects I could speak to you at length. Personally, right now, I do toxicology at the Orange County Crime Lab. And toxicology, in a nutshell, is the process of taking blood or other body parts, including brains and livers, and grinding those up, or taking the blood and extracting what's inside them, those parts, and finding out what the person had in their system when they died. And That has a long history, starting back in the 19th century, when these are other, lesser-known forensic disciplines that we also use in forensic science. But in toxicology, New York was one of the ones that advanced that science quite a bit, and it was a pathologist who was trying to figure out why a whole bunch of people were dying in his city, and there was no good reason. They would come in and they would be dead, and there was no bullet wound, there was no knife wound, there was no obvious, they weren't frozen, they had burned up, and somebody was poisoning them. And he determined that he figured that he would figure out why. He was bound and determined to figure out why. And a bunch of testing, a bunch of the scientific method, which is he tried different things and he got different results. And then he tried something else and he got another result. And then until he figured out that all these people were dying from arsenic poisoning. Now, arsenic is a heavy metal, it's very poisonous. And it's tasteless, and so you can, it's a powder, you can put it in somebody's food, and they can eat it, and they will die. So he advanced toxicology pretty dramatically, and one of the key components of forensic science is evidence. So those items that I was talking about, so the blood and the liver and the brain from dead people, those are evidence. And evidence is critical for forensic science. Without forensic science, or without evidence, we can't do forensic science. And so, and this is forensic science in a nutshell. So, we go to a crime scene, we determine what evidence is, something is out of place, something that doesn't belong, something that's obviously was used, like a bullet, gun, these things are collected, and then they'll be taken back to the lab to be analyzed. Some items of evidence, well, these are tools of the trade in order to detect various things. Sorry, there you go. So we use fingerprint powder to identify fingerprints that are left at the scene. We use chemicals, we'll spray them on the wall or where we think there might be blood, because sometimes people try to clean up their evidence and they'll wipe it off, and we have chemicals that will detect blood down to 1 in a million parts. So extremely small amounts of blood can be detected and then collected. We'll take documentation of the scene, we'll use a camera, we'll draw pictures, we will make sure that anything that seems out of place or anything that we may have missed will be documented by camera, so we can go back and look at the pictures and say, okay, something out here we may have missed when you look at the pictures and say that's there, or even how far something's been moved, or a lamp or a bed or something like that can be evidence. So we have tape measures, markers, and then one of the key things you might have heard about with forensic science is contamination. So if we're analyzing evidence and it's been contaminated by something, it may interfere with the analysis such that it makes the results moot. An example might be, one piece of evidence we use is we'll collect blood from people suspected of drunk driving. And then we'll analyze that and we'll see how high the alcohol level is. Well, if that blood sample has been contaminated with alcohol, improper handling, or maybe it's switched at collection or so forth, those results may be invalid. So proper packaging is key. So like I said before, these are some of the types of evidence. Blood is one of the ones we use a lot. It's used in almost all areas of forensic science. So DNA is very critical. Putting somebody at a crime scene, so collect the blood from a crime scene if it belongs to the suspect. We can analyze it for DNA, and then we can take a sample from the suspect and we compare the two and we can determine if they were at the scene. Tools, people use screwdrivers, crowbars, all sorts of tools to gain entry. We can actually compare the tool to the mark and determine if that tool was used in that commission of that crime. Bullets, we already talked about how they are compared to a firearm. We also use the size of the bullet and also the caliber, also are thing information that we can use. Fingerprints, clothing, hair. Contraband means drugs. We get in the Orange County Crime Lab, we get a lot of drug submissions, and so we'll test those. We'll determine whether they're methamphetamine, cocaine, heroin. Fentanyl is a very new one. So forensic scientists will get all those submissions, they will analyze those, and then they will write a report. So one of the key innovators in forensic science was a guy named Locard. And this is Locard's exchange principle. And this is one of the fundamental precepts that forensic scientists use, and I'll let you read that. But basically what it says is when you touch something or when you do something, you leave a trace. And if you touch something, it leaves a trace on you. And it's the comparison of that material to the person that gives you that connection. So, what does forensic science have to do with evolution or with God or with why we're here? I mean, why are we here? I thought about that a lot. I've been a seeker of the spiritual for basically since I can remember. And forensic science touches both the initial part of life. We do testing. This is part of the part that I was saying was not nice. So a lot of cases that we get are rape cases. When a rape happens and a pregnancy results as a result of that, and they have the baby or not, if they have an abortion, we'll get the abortion remains or we'll take a sample from the child, and then we can get the mother and the purported father, and we test all three of them. And then we can show that by the mix of the DNA, the baby is from the mother and the father or not. So it's half and half, right? So half DNA came father, half DNA came from the mother. And then we test the baby, and if it's consistent with the mix of the two, we can say that child was a result of that contact. And then on the other end, pathology. Although forensic scientists aren't pathologists, pathology and forensic science go hand in hand, and we go to a lot of autopsies. An autopsy is a very traumatic sort of event. I don't know how you can be a pathologist, honestly, I couldn't do that. That's where all the, when I talked about the brain and the liver, that's where that's collected. And it's put in a little plastic tub and then frozen and sent to us. And a lot of the forensic science during that time is sort of, you know, physical observation. So bullet wounds and blunt force trauma, ligatures, marks, all these things are observed and photographed. Sometimes there's collection done, so like they'll dig a bullet out of the body, or they'll measure the length of a knife wound. So from this information, they can get an idea of how the person died. Well, they can do the what and the who and the when and the how, but what they can't do is the why. And that's where I found God, because forensic science is amazing. I mean, we can connect something. We can say, this gun shot that bullet, and that bullet went through the person, right? And then the person goes to the pathologist, and we can say, okay, so it passed through the heart, and the heart stopped beating. And we can pretty much just tell you exactly what happened. We don't know why. Why did the person shoot that person? Why did that happen? So, like I said before, we can talk when we have a birth. We can test the child. We can test the father and the mother. We can connect them all together. We can collect blood off of a wall, and we can analyze that, and we can connect it to somebody. We do a lot of testing of blood and drunk driving tests cases. We can figure out the gun. So, pathology. What causes somebody's death? Well, sometimes when a pathologist gets a body, there's no evidence. There's nothing. Not even arsenic. So again, is why? Why did that person die? And sometimes there is evidence, but it doesn't add up. So for instance, you have an autopsy, and they collect the brain and the heart and the liver, and they send it over to us and the blood. And we do a bunch of testing, and we don't find anything. So what's the cause of death? We don't know. So that's the problem of causation. What caused the earth to be formed? What caused the universe to exist? Well, forensic science has a lot of evidence. I mean, we have the world around us. We have all the people in it. But we still don't know the why. So we're born, we grow old, we find somebody to love, hopefully. We have children, maybe, and we die. That's our evolution. That's our life cycle. But again, there's no why. And forensic scientists have considered what happens in the hereafter. And one of the things about forensic sciences is a comparison science. So we have something and we compare it to something else. But God's incomparable. We only have one, or at least I think we only have one, because I don't know. I don't have anything to compare it to. All the evidence around me is unique. Every person's unique. Every idea is unique. So some of the things that I've learned outside of forensics, it's turtles all the way down. Anybody hear the infinite regress? So that's a picture of turtles. So the earth, in some legends, sits on a turtle. And then that turtle sits on the back of another turtle. Well, what's holding that turtle up? Oh, another turtle. So that's how the expression of turtles all the way down. Prayer and meditation. So forensic science doesn't say anything about prayer. What I've learned, prayer is that it works, and it's like talking to God. And meditation works, and it's like listening to God. So they don't work how I used to think as a kid. I used to think, well, if I pray for $1 million, I'll get $1 million. That would be it working. Well, I prayed for that and didn't get that. So what I determined in my later in life was that prayer was for me to understand that I wasn't going to get $1 million. I was going to get what I needed. I don't need $1 million, but I always got what I needed. So another thing that I found out as I was older is that we as humanity are so focused on the way we interact with each other. All my forensic science was about people crime, but there's all sorts of other activity going on that we don't even look at. All our human activity on the earth, all the damage we've done, I don't get any evidence of that. That's not a crime in our society. And then one of the other things I realized is that religion is the politics of God and spirituality is the experience. So what I mean by that is there's not just Christianity in the world, right? There's Buddhism and Hinduism and Islam and, gosh, I don't know, dozens more, right? Zoroastrian, right? And they all have people in them, and they all purport to believe certain things. And they all have God or gods, but it's all about rising up in the ranks or becoming the one, the church elder, or the person to go to for the answers. That's politics. That's people interacting with other people. What I found out of spirituality was when you cut that out, you said, well, anybody can have a relationship with a God or their God. You don't have to go through a priest or a preacher or anything, whatever elder they have in Zoroastrianism. God is everywhere, like the second hymn we had today. We talked about evidence. They talked about evidence in the song. They said in a bird's song, or I forget the exact words. And that's my evidence too, the wonder and beauty of earth. And that is the end of my talk on forensic science. I have probably more time, and I have would love to take questions if anybody has. Yes.
What drew you to forensic science?
That's actually a funny story. I didn't know anything about forensic science when I was hired. I knew zero. I was a biology graduate from UCI, and I answered a little itty-bitty ad in the Los Angeles Times back when it was on paper, and they said I needed a science degree. And I went through, and during the interview, they asked me, what forensic science was, and I said, I don't know. But I knew biology, and I knew the scientific method, and they hired me, and 28 years later, here I am. Yes?
Do you imagine that with the advent of social media, all the TV shows that have got forensic subjects, that the would-be criminal is smarter as the day goes on, as life goes on, and make your job a little harder?
I don't know if smarter is the word, but they do adapt. So before the advent of DNA, burglars would just go in and do their thing, right? They had their tools and so forth. And now they wear gloves, because gloves keep them from leaving as much DNA. However, oftentimes they leave their gloves. So, yeah. I mean, there's different things. Some are smarter than others. There's another funny story about a guy who walked into a liquor store with a gun, and he said, give me your money out of your cash register. And the guy gave him, I don't know, $20, and then he fled, and he left his wallet on the counter. So it was that kind of evidence that you don't need to analyze, because it had his license in there and told exactly who it was that did the robbery. Anybody else? I saw a hand over here. Go ahead.
Do you find that science is at odds with religion or spirituality a lot, or do you find it relatively easy to integrate the two?
I used to think science canceled out those. But now I see that science is in explaining the more mundane interactions of life, and spirituality and religion are more about hope and trust and synchronicity, I guess would be the best word. So no is the short answer.
Carrie?
Sorry.
Sorry.
So the infinite regress. So another way to put it is, if God created the earth, who created God? And then so on and so on. Because what's the initial mover? Most people stop at who created earth. They say, well, God did. And well, okay. But then if you take it one step further, and then people say, well, if you're going to take one step, where do you end? And so the expression was, instead of God, they used a turtle. Say the earth rests on a turtle. And so then, where's that turtle rest? Well, on another turtle. And then keep going. Anything else? Yes. I'm sure my co-workers went to that scene.
Yeah, some guy was just sitting there and someone just killed him, which I thought was very wrong.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's my day-to-day work life. So, in Orange County, we only respond to homicides or high profile. We don't respond to burglaries or robberies or that thing, as forensic scientists. But the sheriff's department responds to all those. So they responded and collected whatever they found and sent to us.